Welcome to this very special Between Takes episode of Missing Frames. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge, and I wanted to give a brief introduction to this episode. So basically what we did here is a few weeks after Twin Peaks, The Return, concluded, I was joined by Mr. John Mills and Mr. Joey Thorne making his first ever Missing Frames appearance to just discuss and debate how the season went for us, whether or not we liked it and all that kind of good stuff. And as I'm sure many of you Twin Peaks fans are aware, Twin Peaks The Return was just released on Blu-ray this past week, which is fantastic. And I figure what better time to release this episode than now. But I just wanted to give you a fair warning. We did run into some audio difficulties. We recorded this in some unusual circumstances. We're all located on different parts of the East Coast, but I'd like to think we made it work. And if you hear any audio interference, I don't know. It could be our equipment. I have a gut feeling it might actually be the Black Lodge trying to interfere and communicate with this plane of existence. I'm just throwing that out there. It's just a theory. It's not confirmed, but hey, I'll let you decide. Other than that, I wanted to go ahead and plug the Nerd Party in general. Make sure that you're following the Nerd Party on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. If you haven't already, like us on Facebook. It's just the Nerd Party. There are a ton of great shows, and I highly recommend you check them out. But in the meantime, I really hope you enjoy this, the Great Twin Peaks Debate.
Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Great Twin Peaks debate. So we're going to go all out. We have a whole variety of opinions and feelings and thoughts and dreams and hopes that are going to be crushed in this episode. And I can only hope that everyone who's listening, that all your dreams are crushed as well. So gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on as always, Sean. Thank you.
And thank you for allowing a newbie to come on as well. I don't know how great the debate will be, but...
I know. I do want to put an asterisk next to that because
I don't want
anyone to call me out.
We're so intimidated. We had to gang up on you. It's got to be 2-1 right here. That's
how I feel right now.
Yeah.
I'm a little concerned.
Yeah.
So all right. Well, let's get, so this is actually kind of a sequel episode. John, you're in like every sequel episode I do. I think that just needs to be a tradition from now on because we've been doing the Before trilogy together. We're now doing Twin Peaks together. Mm-hmm. John and I, a few months ago before, like right around the time Twin Peaks, The Return, quote unquote, season three, whatever you want to call it, premiered, I had just finished the television show and I had watched Fire Walk With Me. So we talked about the series, we talked about the movie, and then we talked about the first couple episodes. And John and I were pretty much on the same page. We both really enjoyed those first couple episodes. Joey, how did you feel about those first? Let's just start with the first two episodes. Let's like pick up where we left off so you're caught up with us.
Well, just to interject one thing before we go to the new series, it's it's kind of funny because you talk about how finishing the original series, watching Fire Walk With Me, and then going right into the new series, whereas for myself and John, we had to wait 26 years
before. I know. I'm a spoiled little punk. Lucky me.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, the question was, what did I think of the first couple of episodes?
Yeah, so well, give me a little brief history about your Twin Peaks obsession. What, you know, are you you're a fan? You know, what sure. What, how did you get introduced to the show? Were you watching it?
I was introduced to the show in high school, those many years ago. by some other friends who are watching it. So I kind of came in the middle of the first season. The one great thing that happened during the original season, since there was no streaming or video or DVD or anything like that, is that they reran the entire first season the summer leading up to the second season. So that's how I was able to catch up. And I became obsessed with it. And I think, I believe I turned John onto it as well. I can't remember if you were already watching, John.
You did. You pointed me in the direction, and then it tumbled because my brother had been watching it, and because he's an older brother and a jerk, had never pointed me toward it. So you were the one that got me in.
And I just, like everybody, I loved it. I watched it religiously every week. I taped every single episode, watched them repeatedly, look for things I may have missed, loaned the tapes out to people that had not seen them. Became a lot harder in the second season because there were a lot of preemptions. They moved it to Saturday night, and so I set my VCR. I learned how to set the VCR timer quite
good,
well.
Good God, that is devotion.
Yeah. And there were a lot of preemptions, actually. Luckily, it never was in our market due to the Gulf War at the time. I became obsessed with the show, and
Were you still on board with it even when the second season kind of took a dip in quality? Like, were you kind of like holding out hope, like, it'll come back, it'll be okay again?
Yeah, it definitely became harder and harder to justify the fandom because a lot of people had dropped off. But I was also aware at the time that the network had required simpler side plots to make it easier for the audience to catch up. Things such as Nadine thinking she's a high school kid.
Oh my God. I remember that was the point where I started to tune out. I remember that distinctly. I was like, Hurley? No.
Not a James Hurley. You know,
James Hurley, yes. But I remember Nadine being the cheerleader. That specifically was the point where my wife Sarah and I looked at each other and we're like, oh, I guess it's bad now. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what? Even though I'm not that crazy about that subplot, I will admit that the moment she comes in and kicks the, if I can say it, crap out of Hank Jennings, was kind of worth it.
You can say crap as much as you want. Crappity crap, crap. We love crap here on Missing Frames.
But when it came to the love triangle of Dick Tremaine and Lucy and Andy and, and of course, James Hurley going off to Noir Town, it was just, what is this? I stuck with it, hoping it would get better. And then what happened was they announced that the show was going to be canceled, but they were going to allow it back for 6 episodes. And in those 6 episodes, that's when Annie was introduced, Cooper's new love interest. And I felt that the show got better. And then what happened is you have the final 2 hours where they threw everything but the kitchen sink in, and you get down to that final shot and realizing that this was it forever. And we can go into spoilers, right?
Oh, of course. Of course, yeah. Let's remind people, this is a television show that's been around for 25 years. We're going into full spoiler mode. I assume if you're listening to the great Twin Peaks debate, you probably are a Twin Peaks fan, or I would hope you are. Otherwise, why?
Wanted to check, you know. I know why they did it. They wanted to throw every cliffhanger they could think of, hoping that the show would be picked up. But unfortunately, it was all for naught. And then you have the hero of the show, Dale Cooper, look into the mirror and you see the face of the killer showing us that he's possessed. And then the final credits roll. And I remember sitting there going, what? And I was pissed.
It's so funny because I because of the fact that I had the show like right on the horizon, I the finale might of the second season, now I can't call it the finale anymore, that may be my favorite episode of the entire series, to be honest. I just loved it so much. It was so bonkers.
Yeah, I know a lot of people love it because David Lynch basically threw out the shooting script. And I came across the original script online. And if it's accurate, it was still a pretty good script, but it was totally different. But as a fan, I began to have hope because I started hearing rumblings later on. Remember, no internet, that Lynch was going to make a movie. Oh my God.
So Fire Walk With Me. Let's hear. So how that was, doesn't seem to have been well received by anybody at the time. Definitely not fans of the show. Were you one of those fans who was totally like, no,
No. Yes, I didn't like it. I still have my problems with it till this day. I've come to appreciate it more. I don't dislike it as much as I did then. It was just that, well, what had happened was Kyle MacLachlan, this is the one thing they don't talk about now with the new season. He was worried he was going to be typecast. He was getting full Fox Mulder syndrome. So I think he wanted to step away from the show after the cancellation. So he was not on board with the movie originally because the movie was not going to be a prequel. So David Lynch decided to do a prequel, and that led to Mark Frost, the co-creator, not wanting to do it at all. And then all of a sudden, Kyle MacLachlan changed his mind, wanted to be involved. So then Cooper got reintroduced just in a smaller aspect. I still wish Lynch would have held out. I think a prequel was a mistake. It was territory we'd already seen. It didn't really, advance the story, in my opinion. But now that I've seen the missing pieces with the Blu-ray and I see some of the scenes that were cut out, I see them and go, wow, I wish these would have been left back in because it really helped the narrative structure better.
Yeah, I watched some of the missing pieces and kind of it felt very much like, oh, that's the missing pieces. No, it was like, oh, that's the Twin Peaks episode that everyone was kind of hoping this movie would be.
Yeah, and even though you saw a lot of the major characters from the show, but the one scene in particular is when Donna Hayward's father, and John, you can correct me on this, is like, he mentions something to her about wishing angels to look over her, something like that. And then you see the end of the movie, and it's like, oh my goodness, why did they cut this scene?
this is the thing that is fascinating to me, is that I actually see in the current debates in some circles about Star Trek Discovery some of what Fire Walk With Me encountered, which is, this is territory, to speak to your point, Joey, this is territory we have been through before. We know how this is supposed to happen. And he introduced the Kiefer Sutherland and Chris Isaac character. And I remember specifically at the time, Joey, and I'm not saying this is a good, bad thing or whatever, but you had a very particular problem with that because it seemed to contradict something having to do specifically with some piece of case history that they had discussed in passing in the first season or something like that.
And at the time I was an Uber fan and I was nitpicking, and it just seemed to me that it didn't fit that it basically throughout the original run of the show, it led you to believe that Agent Cooper had investigated Teresa Banks's murder, the first murder, alone, and that nobody else was involved. And then also in the movie introduces Chris Isaac and Kiefer Sutherland, that they were the characters who investigated her murder. It's like, wow, this never would have been brought up before, including an FBI agent that disappeared while investigating her murder. This would have never been brought up in the series. So that just
and Spock never mentioned that he had a half brother because of a technicality. So,
found out that was wrong, because it gave us the blessing that was Star Trek V, Final Frontier.
You're darn right about that. But what's fascinating to me, though, is it is so funny to see how these cycles sort of repeat themselves, because then when Lucas comes out with his prequels, same sort of split and argument happens. Well, why didn't you mention Qui-Gon before? And now with Star Trek Discovery, well, why didn't you mention Scott, that Spock had an adoptive sister before? So it really seems to be a really interesting sort of impulse on the people who create or manage these franchises to try to spice things up by saying the past isn't quite what you thought. And there's always that initial reaction among fans, especially hardcore fans, to say, no, this is not what it's supposed to be.
I just wish that every prequel could just be Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, with people getting their hearts ripped out, children being beaten, bugs being eaten. That's what I want out of my prequels.
In terms of hearts being ripped out, I suppose some fans would argue that any prequel does that to them. So,
touche. Well, yeah.
John's going to think I'm taking a shot, but I swear to God, I'm not. Fire Walk With Me was like when I learned that I just didn't like prequels, that I think prequels were a bad idea.
That was what introduced the idea of beware of prequels.
Yeah, everybody.
So at the end, so Fire Walk With Me comes out. Did you have any hope at all that, like, 25 years later, or even any amount of time later, not just that specific amount of time, that it would ever come back? Or were you like, we're done. It's dead.
I always had hope, you know, childlike hope, I guess you could put it. I mean, the movie did not do well. Apparently it was a huge hit. And was it China, John? Was it Japan?
I'd always heard that it was like the most successful movie in Japan, which is probably untrue. I mean, keep in mind that this is pre-internet, and so, you know, two teenagers walking down the street, it's the most successful movie in Japan ever. How are you going to check that? You know,
yeah.
What? I don't know.
So, unfortunately, the movie didn't do well, and it looked like Lynch was done with Twin Peaks forever.
When did you start like feeling? Okay, so things start to move along. I was not on the Twin Peaks bandwagon at the time, but I remember seeing, it was like 2014, started seeing some rumblings, like David Lynch was tweeting about stuff. Then he was in and out, and he was like, oh, they're not going to do it the way I want to. So when did you start to feel like, oh, this might actually happen? And what were your thoughts about that? Like, positive, negative? How are you feeling about this?
Well, just a little bit leading up to that, one of the things I started to find out over the years is that Mark Frost, the co-creator, who unfortunately, when it came to accolades for the show, got glossed over many times. David Lynch received all the credit. Mark Frost was just passed over, sadly. And I think he had more to do with the show's success than people realize. And David Lynch has admitted as such. But he became a very successful novelist. And I kept thinking to myself, why doesn't this guy write a Twin Peaks book? I mean, he co-created it. It's an established property. To me, that's just money in the bank. Well, as you said, around 2014, they both released a Twitter post the same day, both of them together at the same time, saying that Gum You Like is going to come back into style, letting everybody know. Now, what's funny about this is that Lynch had sworn for years he was done with Twin Peaks. He's not going back. Even his daughter said, Jennifer Chambers Lynch, who wrote the Secret Diary of Laura Palmer.
And what a gripping read that was, Joey. What a gripping
Oh, yes. That's, yeah.
totally on my Amazon wish list.
No,
it's kind of brutal to read. he had said he was done with Twin Peaks. I'm not going back. Stop asking. And then all of a sudden they put this tweet out together and it's like, wow. So then you find out they're going to do it at Showtime because the guy that was the head of Showtime they worked with at ABC, Mark Frost was back, David Lynch was back. They're both, the team was back together. That to me was very hopeful. It's like, okay, this is not like Fire Walk With Me Now, where half of the creative team has decided to step away. Both guys are back together. They've had 26 years, you know, to think about stuff. And apparently they'd been working on it for some time. They're bringing back most of the original cast members. I was extremely hopeful. I was posting Twin Peaks stuff on Facebook constantly, saying I couldn't wait for 2016, which at the time was the release date. It was going to be 2016. And then it got pushed back to 2017. And then you heard that it was going to be 9 episodes. And then Lynch said he wasn't happy with 9 episodes, and he walked away. Then he came back and they had another deal, and it was going to be 18 now. I have some speculation about that I'll save till later about the amount of episodes, but I'll hold off on that. But yeah, well, I was fully on board with this. I thought it could happen, you know, 26 years later, especially when you had in that final episode, see you in 25 years.
I know, perfect. I remember Sarah turned to me during the finale and she was like, are you kidding me? Did they plan that? And I was like, they sure did. No, they didn't. Of course they didn't. So let's go ahead and just jump right in to the return. And Joey, we'll start with you. Let's just overall thoughts. Let's not go too in depth. We'll kind of go into it as we get along here. But Joey, just overall, how did you feel about Twin Peaks? The return / season 3 / revival.
That's a lot to unload, my friend. I don't know if we could do that here in a couple of hours.
And give us a bite size.
Let's back up. So I take it that I know John was a big fan of it. Were you as well, the whole thing as well?
I absolutely adored it. So yes.
Okay. Well, to back up to your original question, was what did I think of the first two episodes? I actually liked them. I thought it was, okay. It leads into the rest. I did like them. I thought, oh, this, okay. You know, this is interesting. We're starting off new. This is some weird stuff. I didn't think it was weird for weird's sake. And then I kept watching and slowly that opinion changed to confusion, to being dismayed, to just Then it turned to rage. Then it turned to, why am I still watching this? I'll say the best thing the show did was, is I watched it with my fiance, and it was something that we planned to do. We actually sat down on Sunday nights to watch it together. So that was probably the best thing I could say about it.
That's a good thing.
We can go over specific things, of course.
But sure. Well, so overall kind of, but John, how, you know, Joey mentioned that you enjoyed it. What, give me your rundown. Give me your bite-sized preview of your review. Review preview, please.
I loved how Lynch basically took the format and had, I felt prepared for how it was going to be because he had said, this is an 18-hour movie. And, okay. And so I sat down and I said, this is an 18-hour movie. So there are definitely moments where I could understand, because Joey and I were exchanging text messages and calls during the whole series, just like we did 26 years ago. Although no text messages then, but you know, we would talk
and carrier. It was carrier signals. Pigeon back then. Yeah. Smoke signals, yeah. And carrier pigeons.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. But, you know, we would discuss, you know, the episodes and everything, but it was for me, it was a joyous television experience because I felt challenged. I felt that it was different. I felt that it was somebody with a complete command of their craft who wasn't riding along on a network TV train, but said, this is what I'm going to make. And for me, I will always react, nowadays at least, if I see something and it is an artist being an artist, not just creating a product, which we get so much of, but saying, this is my art, this is how I want to tell it, I don't care whether you like it or not, here it is, I react pretty positively to that. I felt rewarded by the end of the series. I thought that it was great. I did. And Joey and I, and this is something I definitely want to point out. Joey and I have been friends for many years. We've had very heated arguments about a lot of things that he's been wrong about. And I know that we remain friends. This is the thing that bends my mind, is people, whether it's Twin Peaks or Star Trek Discovery or anything like that online, they are practically coming to blows and I can't talk about this with you anymore. And they get so mad and so worked up. Joey and I will sling hash at each other till the cow comes home. And then we're like, okay, well, we'll argue about it next week, right?
Yeah. It ends with you two sobbing into each other's arms.
Usually,
and it's and the music swells. But
that's my perspective on it.
No, I think that's, I mean, that's great. I think we are at a point where it's like everyone is very sensitive about these things. And I mean, you're talking about things that you love. So when someone says, I hate that, it's basically an attack on like your taste and the things that you feel or enjoy. So I can understand the strong reactions. It doesn't make sense for friendships to end because of it. I'll just say, yeah, I, you know, in the Twin Peaks episode, the Twin Peaks focused episode of Missing Frames we did, I said, I just want, you know, I was on such a David Lynch kick. I kind of still am. So I just said, I trust David Lynch to do something I've never seen before. And that's exactly what I got. And there was something very satisfying. We live in a day and age where it feels like with The Force Awakens, which I love, with the Marvel movies, which I also love, there is this strong, like, it has to be a franchise. It has to make money. And how can we, there's like some sort of formula. There's like probably like a scientific formula now at Disney that they've cracked. Like, how can we make a movie enjoyable to the masses? Plug in the formula. And so I've become very aware of that lately. So there's something very satisfying about David Lynch and Mark Frost coming in and basically saying, we're going to make something that no one is gonna like, but no one is going to like have the same reaction. Everyone is going to have a different point of view. Everyone's gonna have a varying point of view, and somehow I feel like every point of view or reaction is the right one, regardless of if you liked it or not.
Just as a quick point, I had an interesting challenge thrown my way from somebody else who didn't like it. And they
there's more than one of us.
Yes.
What?
Oh, they what they pointed out was, I'm a huge fan of George Lucas and his bare bones, like, speed storytelling. You know, it's like he's a master storyteller, but he cuts it down to the bone. And then I turn and I love it and I adore it. And then I turn around and I watch Twin Peaks, which is the absolute antithesis of that. And I love it. And they said, how can you reconcile this? And I said, I just like both, but it's entirely possible that, like, Lynch is, to speak to your point, like, almost like a palate cleanser, where he's doing his own thing, and it's not that franchise formula. It's not the math, the Disney math that that made everything work. Joey.
And see, and I can respect that. I mean, if people liked the pacing about it and they liked that it was different, I mean, that I can respect that. I can't really disagree with people there. My problem with it is that after a while, it just, I realized this just isn't Twin Peaks. This is Eraserhead in Twin Peaks. this is every other David Lynch thing but Twin Peaks, and that's what's bothering me.
Yeah, I can understand that. There was a very, from the get-go, it was like, oh yeah, Lynch is driving the show here. And, you know, not to discount Mark Frost, who I agree he's been kind of unfairly shoved aside because people are so, like, David Lynch is such a brand in and of itself. So in and of himself, he's such a brand that people kind of forget about Mark Frost's contribution. So there was an element of, like, oh man, this is really out there. Is it Twin Peaks? I don't know. I kind of got, it felt very unmistakably Twin Peaks to me, in the same way J.J. Abrams feels very Star Trek to me. Not because it was as crazy and action-packed, but mostly because Abrams' Star Trek, even though it was definitely not Star Trek-y, it still maintained that spirit, and I recognized the characters. I think part of the thing about Twin Peaks, one of my good friends, Matt, he pointed this out to me. He was the one who actually first told me about Twin Peaks back before anybody I knew was talking about it. His big problem was that Twin Peaks was all about the ensemble. You had this amazing cast of characters that you loved and you cared about and you were invested in. And this new season doesn't really focus on them that much, which is a complaint I can kind of get behind. And Joey, I'm wondering if that might play into what you're saying about it not really feeling like Twin Peaks. Did you feel like it was missing that kind of the spirit of that ensemble that made the original show so great in the first place?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I thought it was missing that completely. It just became the story of Dougie Jones for 37 episodes and kind of about Twin Peaks when it felt like it. And, you know, when it was in Twin Peaks, it always felt better. But then, you know, when it was in Twin Peaks, the surface way they dealt with all the characters, it was so in and out so fast. It was like, what is this? Why can't we stay here? Why am I back to Dougie Jones eating something?
See, I loved Dougie Jones so much that I was okay with that. I kind of gave myself over to the random stretches of, like, nothing. Like, I was kind of like, oh, okay, I guess I'm going to be watching this guy sweep the floor for 10 minutes or however long in the bar.
Yes.
I was so invested. Part of that, like, where Twin Peaks had the quirky character exchanges, like in the first couple seasons, you had all these weird exchanges between characters. I kind of took those odd moments between major scenes as like, oh, that's kind of this new series answer to that.
Yeah, for me what was really weird is, for me, I actually see this season in two halves, in a sense. I don't know if it splits cleanly in halves, but I do think the first half, as I'm calling it, is very, very Eraserhead, very out there Lynch. And then you have the episode, which I don't know what the actual episode title is, but Birth of Evil, where
episode 8.
Yeah. It was pretty much anyway, where you find basically the creation of this evil coming into the world and everything like that. And then I thought that it took a turn and was more traditional Twin Peaks ish after that point. Am I the only one that got that vibe? I mean, Joey, I'd be curious to know if you thought it turned more toward Twin Peaks.
There were moments, but for me, it just wasn't enough. It's not that I minded Dougie Jones so much. It's that it's funny. I listened to a number of podcasts throughout the show, including the Entertainment Weekly sanctioned one, which was just horrendous. I tuned out of that one almost immediately.
Not quite the pedigree of Missing Frames.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no. I'll just to back up. I'm gonna digress for a second. But if you remember in the second or third episode where you see the actress who played Ronette Pulaski, who's in the Purple Sea room with Cooper, she's credited as American Girl. This led to the Entertainment Weekly podcast person saying that David Lynch was directly referencing Tom Petty's American Girl, and he started reading off the lyrics and comparing them to the episode, and I was listening, you know, hitting my head against the steering wheel. I was pretty much out after that, but it's kind of funny, you know. Tom Petty, rest in peace.
Just to tie into that, like, that's just sort of the world we live in now. I mean, like, we all do this. We all go a little too deep with things sometimes.
And I think especially Lynch is open. I've got to say, part of what I loved about this show is just reading people's reactions. And not only that, but reading people's interpretations of the episode, because there was so much in every episode that you had to unpack, and there were things and details that I missed. So just watching people try to make those comparisons and try to make it mean something it was so enjoyable to do. And I feel like it engaged its audience in a way that I haven't seen in a while. As far as, like, you have like things like Game of Thrones where people are like, yeah, did you see that? Did you see who died? Did you see all those breasts? And, like, you know, people talk about it, but Twin Peaks kind of engaged its audience in a way that I felt, I can't speak to this point, but it reminded me a lot of what it must have been like in the old days, where it's like you had to find somebody who was watching it and be like, can we just talk about this for a second? Because this is absolutely insane.
Well, I mean, this might be, you might be saying I'm being too cynical, but one of the things, I mean, this new series, I was really into paying attention to it at first, especially when he's sitting with the giant, who for some reason now we call the fireman. I don't know why. You know, he's telling him, remember Richard and Linda, remember 430. And yes, I know that gets brought up in the final episode. I still think it's bunk. but then, you know, through the next six episodes, we're seeing numbers here and there, and everybody's going, oh, it's all going to make sense. It's an 18-hour movie. And then after episode 8, I was like, no, this is nonsense. This is not leading anywhere. Stop it, guys. And I know I'm never going to convince some people of that, but no, it was just all nonsense.
No, I definitely disagree with that, specifically because the act of filmmaking, even when you are as out there as David Lynch, is such a specific and deliberate act. Even bad decisions are still decisions that are made. You may look at a decision and say, what were you thinking? But they were thinking about something when they did it.
I've seen enough interpretations about, like, not, you know, the episodes in general, but specifically the finale, where there are too many elements that make sense. Random elements that it was like, yeah, this makes a little bit too much sense for this to just be like Dave Lynch being like, whatever, whatever. But at the same time, I was kind of totally, I react to things in a very, like, emotional, visceral way. Like, something cannot make sense to me. I can watch something that does not make sense, but if it's engaging me on some kind of, like, visceral, emotional level that I can't explain, I'm willing to just be like, sure, throw whatever you want at me. I'm with you, because I this is making me feel something, and I don't know what that is, but at least I am feeling something.
Do you think, Joey, that is what it boils down to? That Sean and I are in this camp where we're sitting here and we're thinking, it's engaged me, it's hit me, I don't quite know what to make of it. And so we're just wired in such a way where we just react more positively to it. Whereas when you're, as a viewer sitting down looking for something, you're looking for it to have a structure that in a specific circumstance like this. I'm not saying that, like, you would sit down in a Darren Aronofsky movie and be like, all of this must make perfect, absolute, logical sense at the end of it. Like you get abstract filmmaking, you understand it, but because it's specifically this story, that might have something to do with why it doesn't work for you.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And that probably is my biggest problem with it overall, is that it did not fit with this story. Twin Peaks has always been sort of an oddity for David Lynch because it's probably been his most grounded of anything he's ever done. And I always attributed a lot of that to Mark Frost. There's a lot of speculation now. And I think it might have some merit that that the show really was written to be 9 episodes. Lynch just stretched it out to 18. And seeing 5 minutes of some guy sweeping the floor, I'm starting to wonder.
I mean, I could see that, but at the same time, it didn't bother me in a way that I would be like, oh, this should have been 9 episodes. I do think that I don't know. The whole idea of like 9 episodes versus 18 episodes, or whether or not it was satisfying at the end, or whether or not it would make any sense, it never really occurred to me. I kind of joked about it when the finale happened and people were like, oh, what did you think? Did you like it? And I said, well, it was exactly what I expected, in that it was absolutely nothing that I expected. And part of me, when you're working with David Lynch, I don't really ever think to myself, this is going to make sense in the end. I kind of was prepping myself, embracing myself for nothing to make sense and for nothing to really be kind of tied up in a nice little bow. But I'd also been okay with that. You know, I really enjoyed the original Twin Peaks series, but I think I was a bit disappointed on my first watch through, because I was like, oh, I kind of wanted this to be weirder. And so when The Return came on and it was just bonkers, I was like, oh, perfect. This is what I want. I want nightmare-inducing insanity.
Yeah, one thing I do want to say, because we've hit spoiler territory technically earlier this episode, and I'm presuming we're okay with hitting spoiler territory about the show overall, but I have to say, I don't know if I so much accurately predicted something so much as made a very safe sort of prediction early on, because I remember, Joey, you read The Secret History of Twin Peaks before the show aired.
I was wondering if you were going to talk about this book.
If you remember, you mentioned that there were things, incongruities that didn't quite match up with the series. And what I said to you at the time was alternate timeline. This is going to be an alternate world. And I do have to say that I felt a certain perverse sense of satisfaction at the end of season 3, where they had basically like skipped realities. And I was like, I was kind of right. Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of stuff about time and loops that's, again, is never fully explained. And I'm the kind of guy, I'm like the guy who at the end of Lost sort of was like, I didn't need everything explained. Who cares? That's kind of how I feel here. I feel like the less that's explained, the better it is. When you start to kind of explicitly say things, it takes away from it a bit. So I loved the weirdness of, like, you know, Sarah Palmer sitting in her living room with that loop of the footage going over and over again. And right? It's like, it seems like events are happening. Like, I know Bobby went into the cafe and he's talking to somebody. He's like, yeah, we just did this earlier today. But it's like 2 episodes later and a couple days have passed. And you're like, how is this timeline working? I would love to see somebody go back and try to do that and like look at breaking down how the timeline actually works in the show.
In my opinion, that's just bad editing. I believe the show was so badly edited. You see shots continually reused.
You really think so, though? Yes. You really think so with something this meticulous?
Yes. I don't think he had enough coverage, because even on other podcasts, that people noticed how certain shots in the diner were exactly the same. When you see Dr. Jacoby as Dr. Amps rant in, like, you see it in one episode, then you see it, it's almost the exact same rant. I think it was just another take of the same scene. I truly believe the show was just very poorly edited, just to be stretched out to 18 hours.
I will say that I disagree with that wholeheartedly, but you mentioned editing, and I actually had a back and forth with somebody who, and it was the same person who challenged me about my love of Lucas versus my love of Lynch, who the editing was something that was a hang up for them, where it wasn't so much the you know, in this context, it wasn't the coverage stuff or anything like that, which I do think is very deliberate. I also know that Lynch, that has to be deliberate in a sense, because Lynch shoots digital. And one of the things he loves about shooting digital is that he can just keep the camera rolling. And it, because he mentions that he mentions that very specifically in the side by side documentary hosted by Twin Peaks or Twin Peaks by Keanu Reeves.
Twin Peaks hosted something. Yes, oh my God!
Twin Peaks itself is
that's
a person
the that's now. The shocking finale of Twin. This episode of Missing Frames is the actual shocking finale of Twin Peaks, where you realize Twin Peaks is a person and hosts documentaries.
Well, me personally, I love Twin Peaks the person.
Yes. For me personally, it's about the vistas. But the thing that strikes me is we've all made reference now to the guy sweeping the floor for several minutes where he just leaves the camera running. And you could very easily say, what the hell is going on with you right now? Why are you doing this? But at the same time, you can see it very clearly as this is the banality of everyday existence for these people in this reality as it breaks down. Now, am I sitting there trying to equivocate, trying to justify it?
Wait, you're talking about the same location that could afford to have 9-inch nails? That's a banal lifestyle?
Yes. No.
It's the nine-inch nails.
Yeah.
But see,
completely different.
I would love, in all seriousness, Lynch is in love with music, and he loves having those acts in and having music play such a big role. I would actually love to see a version of this where the opening credits are cut out and those bands are cut out, except for the key moments where some piece of plot is happening. And I think you wind up with something that is leaner. And I think that the music there, I'm convinced every song is there specifically as a, it's the play within a play sort of thing, speaking to what happened in that section of the plot. And specifically, there was one episode where the band was more in the middle than at the end. And for me, that's sort of the thing that triggered me, where I was like, okay, what is different about these bands? What is it about the reset? And that's why I look forward to a rewatch of this, to try to figure out what the bands are trying to tell me during this whole 18-hour experience. Joey.
That was another gripe I had with the show as a whole. I did like a lot of the bands. I actually did buy the soundtrack to this, and it's actually quite good. There's some very good new Angelo Badalamenti compositions. My biggest problem is that throughout the majority of the show, you hear none of them. One of the things I loved about the original show was the soundtrack, and this show went so many episodes where there's so much dead air and no scoring and no music. And even when it used the original soundtrack, it just played the originals. It didn't even come up with variations on the Twin Peaks theme or the Laura Palmer theme. It drove me crazy that there was no music.
So here's a question. Would this have played better for you had he used music more the way he did in the original two seasons? Do you think that you respond better to it?
It would not have changed it. It would not have changed, that I would do a complete turnaround on it, but I think it would have been vastly improved having had more music to it.
Well, I wonder, I always took it as this whole season, the fact that it was called The Return kind of felt ironic to me, because the whole theme to me was like, you can't go home again. And I always felt like if you start to too heavily reference Twin Peaks, or you start to insert the music the same way or things like that, it's almost like hitting you over the head with like, yes, this is Twin Peaks, but it's not Twin Peaks. You know, it's like it's almost like it becomes too cheap and referential.
And see, something that I actually really liked in the final episode was a specific line that he had, where they both go and the Palmers don't live here, and I'm not Laura Palmer, and there's this whole thing, and Cooper is extremely confused, and he just looks down and he says, what year is it? And I actually took that as a commentary on the fact that the same nostalgia wave that gives us Force Awakens, that gives us reboot after reboot after remake, Twin Peaks acts as a commentary on that. By the end of it, where he says, what year is this? Why am I back here? Why do I have to keep coming back here?
I like that. I think that's funny. I agree. I like that this is kind of the anti Force Awakens in a way, where it's like, we're not going to satisfy any possible anything you could possibly see as fulfilling in a way, which again, you could also argue is like why you might not like the show, but I kind of love that it was all about upending expectations instead of trying to meet them.
Well, somebody made that point. Many people have made that point, that, and I almost have to agree that was Lynch trolling the audience by, you know, so going against expectations. But one of the things, that bugs me about the series as a whole also is that, no, I don't want it to be like, see, the common comeback is, oh, you just want them to repeat what they did 26 years ago. No, it's just that we got one shot at this. You know, we never thought we were coming back to Twin Peaks. Why waste it? And it really, and it sends me to no end. We just lost Harry Dean Stanton. We've lost Miguel Ferrer. We've lost a couple of other actors in the show, and this was it.
Even then, though, the thing is, even if you didn't like the show overall, you have to admit, I mean, Harry Dean Stanton was great in the show. Like, you know, it was great to see Albert and Cole together again. Like, you know, the characters had great moments. It's just, if I were to make a complaint about this, I would echo what my friend Matt said, which is, yeah, you do kind of miss the camaraderie. You do miss them interacting with each other, and kind of like the same way that the new season of Arrested Development kind of suffered, for me at least, because they didn't have the characters interacting. You could say the same thing about this new season of Twin Peaks, which was like a lot of what gave the original series its charm and edge was having those characters together and interacting all the time. And you got, right when you get that, right when all the characters are back in Twin Peaks, it's immediately snatched away from you with like, now we're going to go into dream world nightmare finale where nothing will ever make sense again.
Yeah. I actually enjoyed it because they had that resolution where Cooper is superimposed, and then he looks at everybody and he says, this has all been a dream. And
yeah,
that in and of itself is a commentary. I mean, you know, Lynch is a big transcendental meditation guy. He's about different planes of existence, and he could very easily, I mean, I think that he is commenting on the fact that Twin Peaks was a nexus, that there is
it's out there somewhere.
Right. It's an infinite sort of thing. And Cooper's task is he's continually trying to get back there. That,
yeah,
the Black Lodge is this nexus that he went into. And every time he's coming out, like, he didn't come out to our Twin Peaks. He came out to a Twin Peaks. And then he winds up in another Twin Peaks. And then he's going to keep jumping and sliding through all of these different places.
Yeah, Lynch, I know Lynch has specifically said that he said like, oh yeah, I visit Twin Peaks in my dreams and all these characters in my dreams. So I did get a very strong vibe that, like, you know, when Cooper's saying this is all a dream, I was like, oh God, that means, you know, this could or could not be happening. It could all be in Kyle MacLachlan's head. Not Agent Cooper's, actually Kyle MacLachlan. Maybe this is all Kyle MacLachlan's dream and we're just living in it, which, I mean, I'm totally fine with, because that man is wonderful. Yeah. But it did kind of, especially at the end, the whole idea, one interpretation I read that I really liked was the idea that Cooper is the ultimate, like, paragon of good. Like, he's constantly fighting the good fight. He's constantly trying to save Laura Palmer. And even though he never succeeds, in every dimension or reality he's in, he's still trying. And it's like, the horrible implication of the finale is that good will never triumph over evil, but that it's more important for good to keep trying.
And that's one of my big problems with the finale. It's like, when all of a sudden...
You shut your mouth, young man.
Yes,
no,
yes.
Go ahead.
When all of a sudden did Laura Palmer become so important? I guess we forgot about Teresa Banks. Why does... And that's what bothered me about that traveling back in time episode. It's like, okay, so even if you save Laura, what then? That doesn't stop Bob. And I've always found the character to be a lot more pragmatic than that. And then I love how everybody kept saying, well, see, it just shows you can't change the past. I'm like, yeah, duh. Who didn't get that? and then you've got this thing, and as somebody put it, and then he comes out and meets Diane. Well, we don't know where. They drive 430 miles away. Good thing they knew which direction to go into. where they go into some other place, they check into one hotel, and he leaves the next day as someone at a different hotel and car, and they're now Richard and Linda, and he meets fake Laura, who he takes back to Twin Peaks to her house, and I'm like, what was the point of this? What is this supposed to accomplish?
Okay, first and foremost, that was supposed to accomplish the world's most awkward sex scene ever.
Oh, my God.
Okay, and, yeah, and I have a question.
Oh, my God.
Parts of this show have reminded me, I do think that some of this, the series return was if Tommy Wiseau and Neil Breen had a love child, you know, they, and it was this series. I mean, let's see.
We've been civil up to this point, and now you're coming out swinging these
fists. I know. Tommy Wiseau, that's harsh.
Well, let's see. The entire sex scene with Diane is scored to an entire song. What movie did
I will like stand
that?
In the way of a mountain? Okay.
What movie did people do that? People endlessly mock for that. Somebody put it best. They said the whole thing with Diane was fan fiction.
It's a different kind of disturbing. It's on the one hand, you're watching Tommy Wiseau have sex, which is just disturbing, but the sex scene in the finale is just deeply unsettling.
But the thing is, through this whole work, Lynch very much treats sex itself as a very sacred sort of like world changing event throughout the entire season. And so I think that scene in specific functions exactly the way it's supposed to.
Hold on. Yeah, so here's the interpretation that I read, and I wish I could remember the name of it because it was so good, but it basically said their idea of the finale was in the very first episode, the two people watching the cube, they have sex, and that's what draws the monster out to attack him. Presumably this monster is Judy. So the idea of Cooper and Diane having to have sex is drawing this creature into this new this other reality and trapping it there, and then it doesn't kill them because I can't remember what it was, but it was brilliant and I loved it, and none of this distracts from the fact that now I have Tommy Wiseau's butt in my mind and I can't get it out.
Do you mean Jaude ex machina? Is that what you mean?
Exactly.
Jaude. Okay, all right, let's pronounce it right.
But, well, you know what it means. You know what it means translated, and this is what's really funny, is that translated, which, you know, in this show, Judy is the ultimate evil, and what is it, Jaude? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
That he, for some reason, doesn't tell us till the second to last episode.
Right, so that translates into explain. So David Lynch is saying the ultimate evil is explain.
Which I think
is absolutely hysterical, and again is another argument that maybe he's just trolling his entire fan base, trolled by David Lynch is just like nothing I've ever experienced before.
Okay, two thoughts here. The first one is the whole reason for me this elevates itself to the level of art is because here are three people, reasonably intelligent. I think you guys are pretty smart, right? I throw it out there for you. But the three, you know, we can sit down collectively and we can argue this, and there will never be a resolution to it. Which,
just like Twin Peaks,
right? Speaks of the theme of the show. But for me,
that's deep.
But for me, that's what art is. Is art is something you can debate. And you know, and it never quite reaches a resolution because for each person experiencing it, even, you know, Sean and I both like it, but our experience isn't quite the same thing. Joey, you hate it, but we can sit here and we can talk about it. We can throw these different ideas back and forth at each other. And for me, what I really hinge on is that one episode, the eighth episode that played Threnody for Hiroshima, where basically what Lynch throws out there is that our screwing around with nuclear technology unleashed the ultimate evil on our world. It made it possible for the ultimate evil to exist and come in and tear the very fabric of reality. So, you know, July 1945 in White Sands, New Mexico is the most evil, disturbing, soul-ripping event in history. I mean, it's an incredible commentary because it's so, I do think it's so deep because this whole thing is this one major sin has these ripple effects that have torn society apart. And for me, that's totally in in keeping with the Lynchian sort of mindset about the world.
I was going to say, no, but I always, I mean, as I said to you at the time, it's like, I didn't so much mind that episode. I just didn't want it to be 55 minutes of a screensaver. It just, but no, the thing about Bob is that, yeah, okay, now we have an explanation of how Bob came into the world, but I like the fact that Bob wasn't always so well defined. He was just an evil out there, and I didn't need more to be more clarified than that. But
yeah, I'll speak to that too. I that might have been my favorite episode of the entire revival, as I think many people loved it. I mean, I just love screensavers so much. But no, I there was a part of me that kind of, like I said, I don't want everything explained. I like it being a little mysterious and left up in the air, which I think ultimately it was. But there was a part of me as I was watching it where I was like, oh, do I really want to know where Bob came from and the origins there? And I was nervous that the show was going to go a little bit too in depth with like where they came from, what their origins were. And then I remembered, oh, it's David Lynch. That's right. Nothing will be explained. I can just pretend it's anything. But I kind of had that. There was a bit of nervousness there that I felt. But I want to let's just jump into. So, you know, this all happened. David Lynch, it came out. It happened. Everyone is reacting all over the board. The real question is, Joey, are you going to go back and watch it? Do you think you would ever at any point have an interest in just watching it, maybe not in one sitting, but trying to watch it kind of as like an 18-hour feature, or just ever revisiting it again, kind of like with Fire Walk With Me?
I know this is going to sound cynical, but no. Honestly, wow. What the only thing that would make me the one thing I would be more curious to watch is the eventual fan edit that's going to come. that to me would be more interesting than watching that 18 hours again.
The Hobbit cut of Twin Peaks: The Return.
Just to cut it down.
Take those three movies and put them into one movie.
Yeah. I think that's really the only thing that would interest me. Just to watch it again. Say it. I'm not.
I loved all the randomness so much. I can't even. It would be interesting to go back and watch and see if I have the patience for it. Because before watching it for the first time, I was kind of like, okay, here we go. I'm sitting here and I don't know what's happening. Now that I know what's happening, I wonder if it will change. But to me, it's all part of like the hypnotic experience of being drawn into this weird, bizarre world where you never quite know what's going on. You never quite know why you're watching it. But I'm really looking forward to watching it again. I can't wait for the Blu-ray to come out. I would like to just try to do an 18-hour marathon, and that might be the end of me. That might kill me.
No, I've marathoned the original six Star Wars films, and people say, "Are you going to marathon all seven before?" No, I'm not. I'm never going to do that again. That's just.
But you're going to revisit this show though, right?
I'm going to blow everybody's mind. Yeah, I am going to buy the physical media for this.
Wow. And
that's what I'm going to throw down for you here, Joey. If somebody were to buy the physical media for you, I'm like Sean, not me. Would you watch it again if somebody gave it to you? If somebody said, I'm buying this for you under the condition that you would watch it, would you rewatch it?
Oh, yeah, I'd do it to be nice. It's just the question is there a time frame?
But the thing is, there are things that are so terrible where even if somebody did give them to me or you or anybody as a gift, you know, like, hey, here's Superman 4. Thanks. Like, I'm going to watch Superman 4 again.
Yeah, I should probably clarify. I mean, the hate is probably a strong word. I was just more disappointed in the new series. I can't say that I hated it. I just thought there was just so many better ways they could have gone, you know, especially after 26 years.
Sure. So, final question, we'll wrap up. Just yes or no, feel free to elaborate a little bit if you want. Do you want a season 4? If that was going to happen, what would you be on board? What do you think? Yes or no?
I would have to say no, because the way things seem to be, the fans don't think Lynch made any kind of mistake, so it's just going to be more of the same. And I hate to say this, I almost wish Lynch would take a back seat. That's the only way I, an executive produce, way I would be excited about it.
John, what about you?
Come on. Yes, I'm on board.
I'm going to go ahead.
I'm 100% on board.
I'm going to say I probably, if they announced it, I would be on board. I want to say no just because I feel like let's just stop. There is a point where you get too much of a good thing. But I also feel like the whole point of this series was like, you can't. What, to Joey's point, it's not the same. It can't be the same. Not that you want it to be the same, but it's almost like I feel like with another season, you're just going to get further and further away. You have to. There's no way you can go back. So I feel like this is a great place to end it, just like I think this is a great place to end this episode. So, gentlemen, John, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Well, you can look for me as Kessel Junkie on your social network of choice, or just, you know, shine the Kessel Junkie symbol up there. My shows, you can find me here on the network at Great Shot Kid. You can find me on Aggressive Negotiations on Trek FM. You can find me on Stage 9, and you can find me co-hosting Words with Nerds because I hate sleep.
Joey, what about you?
Well, I'm not on Twitter, but I do have a YouTube account, Handsome Productions, if you ever want to look up my non-Twin Peaks videos. It's nothing related to Twin Peaks at all. It's mostly all theater stuff like that.
Everything's an 18-hour cut of Joey eating dinner.
You can find me on Twitter at @YeShondorman, and check out the other episodes of Missing Frames. We kind of did a little bit of a different format this time around. Most of the time we're watching movies that we should have seen by this point in our lives, so feel free to go back through our library, give us a 5-star rating if you're listening on iTunes or whatever platform you're listening on. Give us the happiest of ratings. And check out the other shows in the Nerd Party. We've got lots of great stuff. It's all wonderful. I know I'm biased because these people are around me and they'll hold my feet to the fire and force me to say it. But I mean it, and I'm sincere about it. Great, great stuff happening at the Nerd Party. Check it out at thenerdparty.com. Follow us on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty and like our Facebook page, The Nerd Party. That's what it's called. Gentlemen, it has been an absolute pleasure to do this episode. I'm so glad we got to do this. Thank you both for being on the show.
Thanks for having me on, man.
Thank you, Sean.